All right. I think we have this now. Sorry for a few minutes late, but welcome to BrianMadden.com podcast number 120, special edition. This is Gabe Knuth, and I'm trying to run this board for the first time, which is why we're starting a few minutes late. But on the line, we also have Brian Madden in San Francisco, Jack Madden in San Francisco, and we have our special guest, John Smith from Extra Hop.
So, Gabe, are you able to hear us?
I can hear you. That was
fantastic.
The problem before.
Okay. And I assume that everyone out in the world is able to hear us. So that's good. Yeah. And, so John Smith is joining today from Extra Hop. This is a sponsored podcast, which means that Extra Hop gave us money and we talk about Extra Hop for an hour. So I just want to disclose that. But of course, many of you know the name John Smith. Not because statistically speaking, it is the most common name that's possible in the English language. But I was saying yesterday, John, I don't actually remember meeting you. You're one of these people in the industry who I've known forever. You've been a Briforum speaker. You've just been around for a long time.
Even when we consulted with you for the first time, I'm still pretty sure I knew who you were.
Yeah. Ironically, there's another John Smith in the Citrix community, and I actually ran into him. I was registering at Briforum in 2011, and we literally both walked up to the registration desk at the same time. And actually, the girls from Tech Target who were taking our registration thought we were like playing a joke on each other, and we finally met one another. But this was a John Smith that used to like if he showed up at Synergy, if you remember when they used to comp our rooms, they would say, "Oh no, we've already comped your room. John Smith already came in," you know. So yeah, when you're looking at that Microsoft form and you see that John Smith there at the bottom, that's me.
Yeah. And you've been in the industry a long time. I wonder if you can fill us in a little bit about your background, because specifically, I know you're at Extra Hop now and you've been there. I mean, it's got to be like 3 years. And I don't know if you know this, or even Gabe or Jack, from my standpoint, you going to Extra Hop put Extra Hop on the map, at least in my world. Because, there's a few people who are kind of, that you've known for a long time or kind of more, familiar with and who are out there kind of doing their thing. And then we had always known that sort of Extra Hop existed, but there's a lot of vendors in our space, and it's hard to keep track of which ones are cool and which ones are not and all that kind of stuff. And the fact that you went to Extra Hop was like, huh.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. The first time I heard about Extra Hop was at some Synergy, and some PR person emailed me and asked if I wanted a briefing or an interview with Jesse Rothstein. And so I went and checked out Extra Hop, and they seemed cool. But really, yeah, once I learned that John Smith, like John freaking Smith, went to Extra Hop, I'm like, wow, that's a good get right there. And so that instantly legitimized Extra Hop in my mind that they went out and got you.
What's funny, they earned it. I have to give them credit. So I have kind of an interesting background. Specifically, I've been in the industry, I think this is my 21st year. Started out, with a web hosting company. Worked for EDS for a while. Was actually an OS2 Warp domain administrator. Did a brief stint in security and then swung hard into Citrix around 2001, 2002. With Extra Hop, believe it or not, that was an interesting get together. I was working at a company and they were going to bring Extra Hop in. And if you remember, I was Mr. EdgeSight under the hood. I was kind of a big agent guy and I loved to mine data, right? That was kind of my thing. That's what I did. And I swore that they would never buy Extra Hop. After actually getting a look at the product and actually getting to see how it worked, and how it integrated with our systems and the fact that it was totally agentless, I actually ended up going to my boss and saying, look, we're going to have to have Crow on this one. We actually need this product. So it was certainly an interesting, like I said, when you make the statement, that was a good get, I have to say they earned it, because I was certainly, as you stated earlier, there's a lot of vendors in this space. And I had thought that this is going to be yet another tool that we're going to have. And what it ended up being was this really, really open, robust platform that we were able to take advantage of. So definitely, it was an interesting route to Extra Hop. And then, of course, now I work for them as a solutions architect. But yeah, my background as you asked, I was with the Centers for Disease Control probably for about 10 years as both a contractor and as a full-time employee, a brief stint in healthcare. And then, of course, now I work for Extra Hop. So about 20 years, like you, of the trenches. I've only been a vendor for about 3 years. So ExtraHop is the first time I've ever been a vendor. And that's certainly been a unique experience as opposed to being, you know, a cubicle guy, you know, for the first 18, 17 years.
Yeah, it's funny when something, you know, in a cubicle world, like in my world, you know, I can just complain about something and say, ah, this sucks, and then move on. And now, if you complain about something, say, oh, that sucks, they're like, okay, great. How should we fix it?
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
But, you know, this is a good segue. So like, let's back up because, you know, you and Extra Hop are in our world of, you know, Citrix protocol remoting, you know, VDI, RDSH, all that kind of stuff. But give us sort of the high level, like, so Extra Hop is a vendor. That's all we got out of this. Like, what is Extra Hop? Who's buying it? What's it do?
So ExtraHop is a wire data analytics platform, and that's one of the things that appealed to me to it. We are a completely agentless solution. We work off of a span. So you basically give us a mirror of the traffic, and we work a lot like a closed caption television, right? We sit back and we observe data, and we have a technology called triggers where we can set conditions, and if we observe those conditions, we can do things like implement counters, trigger alerts, you know, that type of stuff. And now with OctoBlue, maybe at the end of the podcast, we'll talk a little bit about the OctoBlue integration. But now as some of the automation is starting to take shape, you know, we can, if we observe certain conditions, we can maybe do things like reboot a server, something like that. So some of the scenarios that we do, like we have a Citrix bundle. If you remember, I don't know if you do, but 2 years ago, we were actually a runner-up for Best of Synergy prior to winning it this year with our ransomware bundle. And we basically – that was basically built out of, you know, 15 years of getting beat with a Citrix stick. And these are the metrics that I would have liked to have had. And so within that bundle, what we've done is we've set conditions like, here are your users that are experiencing high latency. Here are your users that are copying 6 gigs of data through the clipboard channel on ICA. It's basically, you know, basically a surveillance strategy built for the Citrix engineers so that they can observe that data. And like I said, you guys have pointed out over the last couple of years, the endpoints that users are connecting to their applications from are changing drastically, right? We have tablets, we have phones, we have Windows boxes, Macs, and, you know, maybe some Linux systems too. And with agent-based solutions, it's really hard to get feature parity, even if you write an agent. I don't know that you could write one for the iOS, but getting feature parity across all of those so that you deliver the same visibility across every single platform that's leveraging your applications becomes really, really difficult. When you're a wire data solution and you're just passively observing the data, so long as they're all using the same protocols, you're going to have feature parity in that you can deliver the same visibility into performance for your iPad and your phone as you deliver for your Windows systems, your Unix systems. And so really the only prerequisite ExtraHop has is an IP address. If it's got an IP address, we can deliver value. We can deliver, you know, we can show you the performance metrics. And as the Internet of Things starts to take shape, you know, you may not have an agent for your refrigerator, or there may not be an SNMP MIB or a WMI library for a specific, you know, Internet of Things device. But if it has an IP address, we'll be able to monitor it, right? We'll be able to provide visibility into it. So that's one of the things that was really appealing to me about ExtraHop, is that we can basically come in and fit into any environment and provide some visibility there.
All right, so I got like 50 questions based on what you just said. So first of all, okay, Your software is basically just like looking at the network, and you're looking at remote protocols like HDX, you know, ICA, and just kind of seeing what's going on in those protocols. And then, of course, you can trigger alerts or reports or analytics or whatever. So first of all, what protocols? Is this just a Citrix HDX ICA thing, or is there other remoting protocols it supports?
So there's two ways. We have a couple of ways that we can monitor traffic. Anything with an I – so native protocols, we have ICA. We have a protocol – what we call protocol fluency. In ICA, we have protocol fluency in HTTP. A number of your database protocols, SQL, Oracle, DB2, Sybase. We have database – we have fluency in like MSMQ, IBM MQ, ActiveMQ. So there's a big list, and I apologize for not having it. So we have a list of protocols that we have native fluency into. I would say we cover 99% of most of your applications. A lot of your applications are moving towards service-oriented architecture. So there's a lot of stuff that's either delivered via XML on over HTTP or HTTPS, a lot of your newer apps. But we also have something called a universal packet analysis or a universal payload analyzer where we can actually look at socket-driven and legacy solutions. So, I mean, we cover a number of protocols from HTTP to HL7 to ICA. We do parse HDX, the AppFlow protocol as well. So we have a pretty large list that we have native fluency. And then if you don't mind doing some parsing yourself, then we can, you know, if it's got an IP address and you know the ports that it's communicating on, there's a pretty good chance we can parse that as well.
And so this fluency means you can break into an ICA packet or an ICA stream and then know, like, that's how you mentioned before, you can know this is clipboard synchronization data, this is printing data, this is keyboard, mouse, you know, screen data, et cetera.
Exactly. Yep. So, yeah. So when I say protocol fluency, then we're able to open up that protocol, and that's exactly correct. So within the ICA protocol, we can see things like the channels. We can see the EUEM stream as well. That gives us visibility into load time, the launch time, you know, what the application was. So that's an example of a protocol that we're fluent in. And then if it's not a protocol we have fluency into, we have, you know, universal payload analysis where we can look at that protocol, look at the raw text and try to parse it that way for you as well.
And then, I mean, aren't these – almost, this is an ignorant question. Like, aren't these things encrypted or something? I mean, how do you do that?
If you have this – so – if most of the encrypted traffic that we observe is HTTP, so we can decrypt HTTP. We have an SSL accelerator. We have a Cavium chip on our physical appliances. So if we have the cert keys, then we can decrypt that traffic for you. So, you know, most of your encrypted traffic is your SOA or your service-oriented architecture. We can definitely decrypt that with if it's a physical appliance without any penalty.
And then so since you're – and even with like HDX or ICA, you're in the sort of the data center side of things. So it may be going, you know, over SSL, you know, from like essentially the entry point out to the user in the world. But when it comes back in a data center, it gets decrypted – or unwrapped from SSL, then that's when you're looking at it to do all your analysis.
Correct. All of our ICA analysis. A lot of times, like if it's through a NetScaler or a secure gateway, believe it or not, that's still out there. Then we'll provide maybe – we'll provide you this is what the SSL latency is versus this is what the ICA latency is. So we can provide a picture of both. The majority of the metrics are in the ICA protocol. We kind of get to take advantage of the fact that Ike is mature. It has a lot of channels. It has a lot of metrics in it, and we're able to tap into those and look at that. Absolutely.
And then, so what do people do with this? I mean, so now it's just it's giving you, you know, you're going to know what applications people are using, and you know, like you said, latencies and bandwidth and users and devices and everything. But so it, you know, so if I have 1,000 users, you know, connecting to my Citrix environment using ICA, and I can see into there, okay, so what?
Well, so we do a couple of things. We provide we on the ICA side, we provide a layer of intelligence. We sort of take the baton from Citrix HDX and kind of we kind of build some additional intelligence around it. And some of those scenarios are if you think of a large enterprise, they're sort of topologically segmented by CIDR block, right? 10.10.10.0 might be building 5. third floor, and 192.168.5.0 is the OR, something like that. So we can do things like what a lot of our customers will do is we will give you not just your latency by individual user, but we'll parse it out like this is the latency of this particular location. Right? Maybe you have something wrong with a switch in a, you know, in a MDF closet somewhere. So we're able to give them that we're able to parse out the latency by location for them. And we can even do a simple lookup table so that they can actually see, you know, building 5, floor 6. This is their latency, right? So what a lot of our customers are doing around the ICA side is taking advantage of the layer of intelligence that we can provide on that, or they might set up an alert. You know, and when I was at the CDC, we had SaaS developers that would grab big giant data sets, and we would call it FTP over ICA, right? They would grab something through that drive channel. You know, I would have been able to see this if I'd had Xtrop. I would have been able to spot that. So,
because they're the ones who are going to be like, dude, it's being slow.
Fix it.
And I'm like, what?
Yep. Or the network engineer comes in and says, hey, why is the internet bandwidth eaten up by this particular ZNAP server or something like that? Exactly. Yep. So on the ICA side, we're adding a layer of intelligence to our trigger technology and kind of giving them a little bit more holistic visibility. But really where the benefit is on the Citrix side for Citrix teams and other VDI teams is we provide visibility into the downstream communications. I would say in my career, 70% of my troubleshooting wasn't necessarily Citrix related. It was something outside of my Citrix environment. One of the constant problems, and I'm sure you deal with this when you talk to people, is this burden to prove the negative. When you publish an application, either on your VDI desktop or within your ZenApp environment, you become the lever and the fulcrum of support for that application. So if the downstream database is slow, and the user calls up and the first thing the help desk hears is Citrix, immediately these types of situations get escalated as Citrix problems. And Citrix teams get beat up time and time again over performance issues that happen on systems that are downstream that are the group that owns those systems is a lot of times outside of their reporting infrastructure, right? So they really don't have any accountability for that performance, in addition to the fact that, you know, not having any visibility into that, inevitably you end up with this blind spot that you can't see, and people are constantly blaming Citrix.
This is why I like my job as a blogger. Instead of an admin. I remember those days.
Yep. So I can give you a quick war story here. So we had a database app that was really slow, and we were getting beat up over it. And I remember talking to the database team and saying, hey, you know, can I install EdgeSight for endpoints on this database? And, you know, this is a different team. They're not my people. And pretty much I got laughed out of the room, right? And so what ExtraHop did, because it's completely agentless, is that you enter ExtraHop, and now all of a sudden I have visibility into that downstream transaction. And that's what really confounds and really frustrates your Citrix teams. In this scenario, we noticed a stored procedure went from 20 milliseconds to 700 milliseconds. That's less than 1 second. The problem is that it got executed between 7 million and 12 million times a day. So in our world, milliseconds matter. They really do matter, and it can be devastating. And so now we're able to go to the database team and say, hey, we've noticed this stored procedure is a lot slower than it used to be. And it ended up being a corrupt index, right? And so we're sort of licking our wounds and icing our welts over something that really wasn't, you know, a Citrix issue in the first place. It was a downstream, you know, transaction. Bringing that home, in my opinion, and Doug Brown did a study too, and he surveyed some folks, what we provide visibility into, we have a great ICA story, and the intelligence that you can add to the ICA metrics is unparalleled. But where we really, for me, what really hit home and what really sold me, what made me willing to go to my boss and say that I'm totally wrong, was the visibility into those downstream protocols, because that's what I got beat up for time and time again, was that performance. So when you ask what are end users doing with the platform, well, they're adding some intelligence around ICA, which is very valuable, but they're also getting some visibility into those downstream transactions, like a, you know, slow DNS. You know, DNS is the silent killer of of all applications. And, you know, we've seen a lot of instances where customers have up to 90% DNS failure. That's a, you know, that's kind of a, that's something that we can come in and immediately shine light on. That in the past, in your agent driven, in your WMI mining driven world, that's a blind spot. With wire data, there are no blind spots. You're able to get visibility into those downstream transactions. Again, if it's got an IP address, it can't hide. And that was kind of what was so valuable to me. And believe me, I have as big of ego as anybody. And I did not want my rivals in the company to be right. But it was just, you know, that kind of visibility was just not something that I had.
And so I, when you were initially talking about this downstream visibility, I think I was thinking of this backwards. So you mean that, you know, everyone uses Citrix servers, and I'm using the term kind of generically. It's RDS, HVDI, you know, Xenapp, Zendesktop, whatever. But, you know, you use a Citrix server to connect to your Windows applications, but most of those apps then are going to further connect to their backend, you know, databases, servers, client server apps, you know, all their services, file services, you know, AD, DNS, all that kind of stuff. So that's what you're calling downstream, right?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. So absolutely. It's that, you know, the user is complaining that they're, you know, that Citrix, you know, quote, Citrix is slow, but really it's like they're using, you know, like their, you know, medical imaging app. And then because, so ExtraHop is looking at what is going out in the ICA protocol from, you know, the Xenapp server or whatever to the user, but it's also, it's looking at, hey, and that's where you're talking about these, you know, like stored procedure delays or whatever. There's something is running on the back end that this app needed that slowed down, and that slows down the whole app. So Citrix is fine. It's just the application itself got slower because of something else that's janky in the back end, and that's what this thing found.
Exactly. And that is a common, that narrative is a really, really common narrative that Citrix teams are constantly beat up over. Is, you know, like I said, I mean, I've actually had, we actually accused a group of wanting to have their app in Citrix, a place I worked, because they didn't want to support it, right? I mean, it really, and then I can guarantee you, if you question 10 Citrix teams, you'll find at least three that say that that actually is the case, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, and then it becomes, hey, we now have this level three person. That's kind of one of the challenges in Citrix, is that, you know, the teams are already lean, right? I mean, talent, there's a huge talent shortage, especially in Citrix. And if the person on the phone can't fix the problem, there's no level two. There's no Nick Burns, you know, to come help. There's, it immediately goes from a cheap resource to what is in most cases a six-figure resource, right? Now you have this expensive resource doing end user support. And that's expensive, and it can be kind of burnout, right? These people put in their time to become a systems engineer or a server person, and they don't want
to deal with end users.
Yes, exactly. So we do, and we kind of pride ourselves, you know, if you check out some of the Citrix bundle, we have a dashboard technology that's completely widgetized, right? And the whole idea behind that is to not just limit the amount of time that your expensive resources are spending doing end user support. But you can do things with our dashboards like, hey, if the latency is over 300 milliseconds and they're from a remote office, escalate it to the on-premise resource, right? You can put a runbook in our dashboards.
Oh, yeah.
So that you can sort of level up, take those level one resources that are less expensive, because people don't realize how valuable a first call resolution is. It is really, really profoundly expensive when something gets escalated to the Citrix team. And so part of our endeavor is, part of what I like about the openness and the open platform is, not only can we limit the amount of time, or at least position the Citrix teams to have visibility into everybody else's transactions, but we can also, depending on the maturity of the enterprise, you know, we can position the level one folks to have a little bit more visibility as well, and maybe, you know, use a little bit more discretion in escalations. Because one of my frustrations is, the minute they hear Citrix, it's like a ding, 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 winner, winner, chicken dinner. Yeah. Here it is.
Sign to that the goes Citrix to John. Team. Yeah. And just the fact that you keep the Citrix people sort of out of the loop. So level one comes in and says Citrix is slow. And then it goes to the Citrix engineer who spends who knows how much time figuring out that it's the stored procedure that's slow. Then they escalate it back, you know, kick it back over to the app team. And this way, if the level one folks can send it right to the proper app team, it just saves everyone the effort of getting into the right place, you know, sooner.
Yep, Yep. And the cost of that is always underestimated. That process you just went through, that's very expensive when it has to jump from team to team, right? Because there's a, let's say it sits in the Citrix guy's queue for a day because he's swamped, like every Citrix team is, you know. That's when people can't work, it's really, really profoundly expensive. And so we can definitely facilitate that. Absolutely.
This is interesting. I did not see this conversation going this way. You know, about sort of like structure of team and resolution, but it's, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. You know, I'm curious. Let's talk about more about the product, because you mentioned your hardware solution. So, is, what am I buying when I buy ExtraHop? Is it software? Is it a box? Is it either or? What's the difference?
So we have virtual, it's an appliance, and so we have virtual appliances that go from 1 gig to 10 gig, and I'm not on the product side. I'm not.
And what does that mean? 1 gig to 10 gig, the network speeds.
Traffic that we can observe, right? So when you, because we're a surveillance play, basically, right? We're coming in, we're providing surveillance of things like performance, security, that kind of stuff. So we come in and we have a 1 gig device that can observe 1 gig per second worth of data. And then we go all the way up to the physical appliances that can observe up to 40 gigabits per second, right? So, and that's kind of, plays into, so we kind of consider ourselves ready for today's converged architectures, right? So when you purchase an ExtraHop, you can get on the physical side a 10 gig up all the way up to a 40 gig appliance. So a lot of your, especially your with vBlock and some of the converged architectures that are out there today, 10 gig Ethernet is sort of a reality. In fact, 10 gig a couple of years ago actually outsold 1 gig. That was sort of a big, you know, change in the industry. So when you purchase an ExtraHop, you're purchasing an appliance that's ready for today's bandwidth that's out there. And we also, like I said earlier, we also have a virtual appliance. So you come in, you plug it in, and you span, you give us a mirror of the traffic either through ERSpan on your VMware environment or directly through your span aggregation solution, which a lot of large enterprises have, products like Arista, Gigamon, Ixia, or we'll just tap it directly off the switch. But you give us a way to observe that traffic, and then once we can observe that traffic, we can start building out visibility things like, I would say our top use case is performance break fix. But we also have some nice business intelligence cases that we also do. We had a retailer that had a credit application, and they wanted to know what is the average monthly income by age group and by zip code, right? And this was a large retailer. And they wanted to have the ability to have some agility around how they priced things, right? And, you know, if people are, you know, only are if people don't make a lot of money in a particular zip code, maybe the prices stay where they are then, right? You know, stay where they are versus, hey, people in these zip codes make a little bit more money. So this is information, this is intelligence that is in their application that we're able to grab off the wire. So then they know the average income per zip code, per age. In the past, that was a very labor-intensive OLAP data warehousing job. Now we're grabbing that in real time, and they're able to see that data in real time. So, you know, one of the things I loved about the reasons I wrote EdgeSight under the hood was that I loved data mining. I loved pulling data off that agent data. I liked Splunk because I liked collecting a bunch of logs and then mining it for data. And what ExtraHop showed me was, you know, and what you get when you purchase an ExtraHop is you get access to all of the data that's directly on your wire. And the amount of data that's on your network is an order of magnitude larger than any other data source that you have at your disposal, whether it's logs, whether it's, you know, whether it's agent data, whether it's machine data. I love all the data sources. But wire data is far and away the richest data source that you have. And a lot of people just don't realize what's available on the wire. When you purchase an ExtraHop, you're able to tap into what's in there and pull out, you know, kind of pan for those gold nuggets. In between those ones and zeros is some really, really good information.
Man, that's something. And just, you know, something you just don't even think about at all in the context of, like, what data can you pull off the wire. I think it... You know, a lot of us, myself included, are so focused on the role of, you know, a Citrix administrator and kind of the CYA of, nah, it's not my fault, it's your app that's slow or whatever. You just don't think about, you know, okay, like once you're up and running, imagine what you can actually do with all the data that's going through.
John, I know I've asked you this before, and because you mentioned Splunk, and I know that Splunk is unstructured data, so putting rhyme or reason to unstructured data, and you guys are actually looking at the structured data as it goes across the wire. But I asked you if you compete one time, and you said no, that you actually integrate with them, but I can't remember how to describe the integration.
So
absolutely. Interesting, I remember, but you guys actually play together.
We do actually. So one of the other things that you get with ExtraHop is an open platform. So Splunk is a partner, and we can do a couple of things. We can normalize the data, right? So if you think of we can send our data to Splunk, right? We can collect that data off the wire, and if there are specific transactions, the reality is that these SIEM products, they have workflows associated with them that are very mature, right? And so we want to participate with those workflows. So we can pull specific metrics off the wire and send them to Splunk. And in fact, at 40 gigabits per second, we could, you know, send. Now we could send a lot of data to Splunk. But we also, the way we send data to Splunk, because as you're aware, Splunk will charges you, you know, to index that data. So a lot of times in a log file, let's say you may only want 20% of that data, right? There may only be two or three parts of that log that you really want to pull out of, but you're going to have to index the entire log. What ExtraHop can do, we can send the entire transaction, but what we can also do is pre-parse out or normalize that data so that when we send it to Splunk, there's a 100% intelligence yield, right? So instead of maybe a raw log that you might take directly, like a firewall log where 20% of it is actually what you want to use, but you're going to index all of it, we can parse what you really need out of a log, and then you're only indexing what you need, right? And I know that seems petty, but in a world of, again, when we talk about 7 millions and millions of transactions a day, those start to matter and they start to, you know, add up. And so Splunk is a very important partner of ours, and we do integrate relatively seamlessly with Splunk, as well as a number of other, SIEM vendors. And that brings us, so part of our open platform that we've got, you know, you can derive the same amount of value from our platform and never log into the box. We have a RESTful API. So, if you have third-party tools that want to integrate with our platform, they can integrate with us either via the RESTful API. But we also have, I'll talk a little bit about OctoBlue, some of the work that we've done with them. I remember Brian and I think Sean Bass actually tweeted out, hey, OctoBlue is really cool, but what can you do with it? OctoBlue is also an open platform. And so we have something called Open Data Stream where we can actually do an HTTP post. And I'll talk a little bit about some of the use cases, but specifically with OctoBlue, one of the things we were able to do is I created an OctoBlue workflow that in this case just warns me when my Citrix load time is outside of the SLA. And so what we do is we take the 40 gigabit per second eyes and ears of ExtraHop that can provide that visibility. We can observe certain conditions, and then we do an HTTP post to the OctoBlue workflow. So we can observe conditions on the wire, and then we can initiate an OctoBlue flow from that, right? So we can actually participate in these some of these newer technologies leverage things like APIs, you know, and RESTful communications. We're able to actually participate in that. So in this scenario, if I observe my launch time is, you know, exceeding the SLA, I kick off an OctoBlue job that sends me an email that warns me that, hey, your launches are outside of the norm, or you're outside of your SLA. Another scenario that I talked with Steve Greenberg about, again, with the open architecture, is something where if we detect ransomware, we send a workflow to OctoBlue that then they have a product called MeshBlue that is an on-premise device that maybe, you know, we detect some malware, we kick off a job that then reboots it and they get their new PVS image, right? So it comes up without the malware on it again. These are some of the workflows that are possible with open architectures. I don't know if you remember, but in 2014, I actually, my first Geek Speak, I talked about the return of the generalists and how APIs were going to come to the forefront and that tomorrow's tools need to be able to leverage them. And so that's one of the things with the open platform we can do. Imagine if, you know, like in a NetScaler scenario, if we see a bunch of 500 errors, maybe sending a command to the NetScaler telling it, hey, take these servers out of the web farm until these 500 errors get sorted out, something like that. That's not a unicorn. This is what these new technologies, these Ansibles, Chef and Puppet, OctoBlue. These are some of the new technologies that are going to come to the forefront. I think in the next 3 to 5 years. And one of the things I like about our platform is that we're ready for these new technologies. We have an open platform that can leverage those. Whether we're sending a syslog to Splunk, whether we're parsing HL7 messages so that people can do epidemiological work, you know, maybe look at, you know, do epidemiology, or whether we're kicking off external workflows through some sort of external engine like OctoBlue or Chef or something, you know, that's some of the stuff that you get with ExtraHop, the ability not only to open up the data so that other systems can interrogate it, but also to kick off workflows and participate in other remediation, automation and remediation as well.
So ExtraHop itself doesn't do any remediation, but it has this extensibility that lets it plug into the other platforms that then, you know, it can actually kick off more appropriate remediations, frankly.
Yeah, and it depends a little bit on the API, right? So, you know, if I kick off a job that does a Nitro command, I think I can make the case that we helped with the remediation, right? If we see something, let's say we observe some of the security use cases we've had. Let's say we observe a malicious cross-site scripting attack or something like that, and the person doesn't have the app firewall, and we send a command to block it, right? We're telling the NetScaler to block it. So it depends on the API we're interacting with. In the scenario with OctoBlue, OctoBlue would be doing the remediation and we would be kicking off the job. What we can deliver is the eyes. So these workflows themselves, while you look at them, you say, yeah, you're doing a lot of cool stuff with them. Like, I think the big tweet was, you know, but what can you really do with it? When you pair OctoBlue with the eyes and ears, the 40 gigabit eyes and ears of a platform like ExtraHop, now you get, pun intended, you do get some synergy there, right? You get the ability to observe. We take the ability to observe and then say, hey, we've observed this condition. Now kick off that job. That's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And that's really the cool. That's the key piece here, is that everything around the API stuff is that, you know, yeah, you can look at all these workflows, but how do they get started? And really, if the ExtraHop piece is, I can look at your 40 gigabit, like, can we pause for a second and think about how much data, how insane that is? Even 10 gigs, you know, like, yeah, I can look at 40 billion dots per second and decide, you know, what's happening in there. And if something, you know, we should do something about that and record forward API trigger, whatever. Yep. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, keep in mind, 100 gig is I think on its way too, right? So, you know, there's this and that's one of the one of the challenges, right? I mean, like, you look at a tool like Wireshark, or you look at a tool, you know, there are some wire data tools out there, but once we got into gigabit, 10 gigabit, 40 gigabit, I mean, using Wireshark, you know, you would need a terabyte of memory to open the PCAP, right? If you had a 10 second, you know, trace. And so that's part of where we see, you know, like I said, there's a lot of rich data and you need a platform that can harvest that.
Okay, so are we to the point where we can talk about how this ransomware detection thing works? Because I've been dying to dig into it ever since the Best of Synergy Awards. So you guys took home Best of Show at Citrix Synergy, and that's that whole awards process is run by TechTarget. And so I was on the team that chose who Best of Show would be. And the reason that you guys were picked was because of what you talked about right off the bat in the show, where you plug in ExtraHop and span that port or whatever the case may be, and it just works. So you immediately can start using ExtraHop, specifically the ransomware detection, for that award. What's actually going on there?
So this the ransomware bundle was written by my colleague, a wicked smart guy named Tom Rowe. And we're basically, he's taking common file extensions, and he's looking at those file extensions and he's saying, hey, these file extensions are associated with CryptoWall and some of these ransomware. So he's basically, when a system gets infected and it starts to encrypt data, we see that. So the customer is positioned, one, to know who's the bad apple, and two, you know, what files need to be restored, because you immediately need to start your restore process. That kicks off a whole other workflow once that happens. More importantly, the longer it's the system is breached, the more damage it can do. So basically we're looking, when we see a SIFS write or we see someone starting to rename or change files, that's generally I haven't seen an instance when it wasn't true. That's normally where they're going in and they're encrypting those files. We see that happening, right? And so when we see that happening, we then can trigger alerts. We can tell customers, hey, this particular system is encrypting these files. Here's the different ransomware classifications that we've observed, and then the remediation process can start. And you can save yourself quite a bit of pain and anguish, you know, if you're able to, you know, discover this within minutes of it. And even, you know, even it's certainly better than finding out days later, right? And one of the problems is that users get embarrassed and they don't want to say, hey, I downloaded that ransomware, right? And so not realizing the amount of damage they can do by not alerting people, we understand it's embarrassing. But then when they don't alert someone, that allows the system to continue to perpetuate, you know, and they think, oh, I've closed it, it's done, you know, and depending on the breed of ransomware, it can continue to encrypt files. And so we basically see that encryption job happening and we're able to alert on it.
And then, frankly, that could tie into like what we just talked about with the automation, kicking things over into OctoBlue or MeshBlue and or whatever else via the API. We could actually shut down the machine that's actually running the encrypt job.
Yeah, that's something that Steve Greenberg had mentioned, is that what he had envisioned was, let's reboot it, and PVS reboots, and it kind of comes up in, you know, it reboots and comes up in happy birthday mode, right? I mean, I always think of that when, if you remember Frosty, whenever his hat blew off and then they put it back on, he was going, happy birthday, right? Because that was now his first day. I always consider that, you know, your PVS images are a lot like Frosty when his hat blows off. You just reboot it, it comes back up, you know, as if it was its first, you know, a clean machine, right, with a clean slate. So that's sort of some of the processes that we would like to build into it. It's kind of – that's what this offers, right? Currently, we're detecting those encrypted files. But if you look – in fact, if you go to I have a blog that nobody reads, but it's wiredata.net. There's actually a video showing, you know, someone accessing malicious Flash content where the user accesses some Flash content. I kick off a trigger to OctoBlue. OctoBlue checks to see if it's malicious. And if it's malicious, it sends me an email saying somebody accessed malicious content. Now, we live in a day and age where, you know, it takes up to 6 months usually for someone to detect a breach. You know, that process, if you watch it, it actually happens within a few seconds. That's the power of integrating these platforms together and integrating other platforms with ExtraHop, right? And so that's kind of how currently the ExtraHop with the ransomware bundle, we're observing the encrypted traffic as it's being encrypted and we're alerting on it. But there's so much more that can be done having an open architecture like ExtraHop positions you to be able to pair it with workflows.
I'm reading your blog right now. This is awesome.
And so what happens? So,
that'll be my one view today. Thank you, Gabe. It makes me feel better.
I'm the other one. What happens? So I buy ExtraHop, and you know it's an appliance, whether it's physical or virtual. You know, just depends on speeds or whatever. And I hook it into where it can observe my wire data. And as you said, there's a bunch of different ways to do that. So now what? I bought it. I powered it up. I hooked it into my wire data. I push go. Now what happens?
So you have a couple things. We have free bundles. So what I normally suggest is you download, let's say, the Citrix bundle, the ransomware bundle. We have a bundle gallery. And so you can import these bundles and start looking for certain, you know, start looking at different metrics. And you can start observing, you know, basically your packets on the wire. So we have a UI that will observe, that will kind of discover all of the transactions, including new devices. So like if you have a, you know, if you have a rule that you can't bring up 50 new devices without a change request, you know, we can alert you when 50 new devices suddenly show up. So you can basically come in, use the UI and start, you know, looking at what's going on your wire. Additionally, we have the ability, we have an Elastic appliance that also collects flow records, and you can also leverage our search appliance to also just go in and track users. I have a trigger that basically writes every transaction. It's primarily built for VDI, but it basically tracks every single transaction that your VDI user does. And we actually had a university where I went in and showed them, hey, you know, you have all of these transactions that are over port 80 that are 25 megs in size. I go and I look at what it is, and you find out that there are people downloading the Spotify. So you can basically, once you turn it on, you can go in and start. Either it could be one, you could start punk busting, right? Or two, you can actually come in and start observing the performance of your flagship applications, whether that's PeopleSoft, whether that's SAP, whether that's Oracle Financials. You can basically come in and you can be the guy or the gal that has the metrics, that knows what's going on in your environment, because it really kind of gives you an ear to the ground, and we can give you an ear to the ground and position you to listen at all the way up to 40 gigabits per second.
I'm sorry, did you say punk busting?
I'm checking GoDaddy right now to see if that domain's available.
Oh, it's totally, it's got to be. There's just
I'm on Twitter. I want this hashtag punk busting. There's only one result.
Holy crap, punkbusting.com is available.
Oh yeah,
John, I'll buy this and give it to you. You can move your blog to punk.
You have to buy right now because we've got about a 10-second delay on the feed. So you have hit one click purchase right now.
Awesome. Well, there you go. So we'll have a wire data site dedicated to, like I said, if it's got an IP address, you know, and that goes to, you know, we've actually done some security engagements where, you know, let's say you have a database. In fact, I have a YouTube channel that has a where I run a select star query against a fictitious EHR database. We can actually see someone running a select star, right? So if some guy in the mailroom, that's one of the challenges. I know this isn't a security podcast, but one of the challenges in security today is a lot of these breaches are happening over approved ports and with stolen credentials, right? And so in that scenario, the system owner is much better positioned to see that breach than a security team is, right? So if I'm the DBA and I see someone running a select star statement against my, you know, my crown jewels in this particular database, you know, to the security team who monitors ports and that kind of stuff, that looks perfectly acceptable. To me, I'm falling out of my chair because I'm like, holy crap, what is this? Who the hell is this guy in the mailroom running this query, right? We can actually position customers to see that. If you've ever been a DBA, I know, and I'll say this because I know a lot of the audience works with SQL. It's like running Profiler all the time without the SQL server tipping over, right? We're able to see all of those transactions in real time, regardless of whether it's SQL, Oracle, DB2. So you basically have everything that you have in Profiler is readily available to you on the wire, and you don't have to put the SQL server in debug mode. And so you're able to kind of see that traffic as it traverses, and you're able to audit, you know, who's accessing your crown jewels. That's something that's kind of a blind spot in security today. And there's a couple of things. There are two kinds of credentials, right? Compromised and about to get compromised. You know, people have weak passwords, that kind of stuff. And so we position the customer to have that kind of visibility, to kind of see, hey, you know, normally we have stored procedures against this particular table, but now somebody's running select star. That's very powerful. That's very powerful visibility.
And that's kind of, I mean, I'm looking in your solution bundles gallery, and there's like pages and pages of these things.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so that kind of stuff is stuff you can just kind of get up pretty quickly, I imagine, with these bundles, right? I mean, you're not having to program the stuff yourself.
Nope. Thanks for asking that. No, you don't. So these bundles deploy within seconds. So the way it works is, and I should have answered this earlier, you create the groups, right? Let's say you have your Citrix servers. We'll kind of discover your ICA servers, anything running a VDA. So you discover your servers, you create a device group, and then you assign triggers to those device groups. That's kind of how it works. It's pretty easy. Those bundles deploy in seconds. And you don't have to write any code, but we do have an open architecture. So, you know, in addition, we have a number of bundles that are custom built and can be customized, you know, and that's part of the customer onboarding process. We have a quick start process where we operationalize the platform, but also, you know, we will also give you a blank slate and you can paint your own masterpiece too, right? Citrix teams have sort of been forced to become generalists, right? They've had PowerShell crammed down their throat. They've had some of the SQL stuff. You know, they have a broad skill set due mostly to the fact that Citrix has a broad portfolio, right? And so, you know, if we will give them any, you know, we'll write any bundle and any trigger they need, but it is an open architecture so that if you have a maker, you know, those of us that have a maker on their staff or a DevOps mindset, we will give you that blank set and we'll give you all the colors in the rainbow to paint your own masterpiece with. And it uses JavaScript, which is a mature language. There's nothing in a trigger that should be any more difficult than some of the PowerShell scripts that a lot of your Citrix teams have worked with today.
Hey, so I was going to jump in with a completely different question. So this...
That's Jack, by the way. I forgot to pause to let him introduce himself.
That's all right. So, you know, we're looking at you know, traffic in Citrix and traffic in our on-premises databases. How about cloud apps? Because, you know, I actually just maybe you might have seen the post that I wrote at BrianMadden.com last week. You know, taking a look at cloud access security brokers and, you know, doing a lot of the same things and just getting in between the mobile device and the cloud app by using a proxy. So can I do the same thing with ExtraHop?
Yeah, in fact, we've had a use case where we had a customer that wanted to keep their SaaS vendor honest, right? So they were using cloud-based applications. And as you brought up a proxy, I call it SaaS intercept, but basically we change DNS, point it, move the VIP internally, and we're able to, and if they've got a load balancer, that's generally an easy process. That's one DNS record, a certificate, and an IP address. And immediately in the past, they would call the SaaS provider and say, hey, we're having some slowness. And absolutely, of course, they hear, well, everything looks great on our end, right? that dynamic switched from, hey, my SaaS app / payment processing / API has a bunch of 500 errors. What are you going to do about it?
God, that's awesome. Or that was, hey, for the past 7 weeks, this has returned a response in, you know, 7 milliseconds, and now it's taking 700.
Exactly.
God, that's awesome. Exactly. Holy shit. Hey, yep. I just earned our explicit tag, by the way, today.
Yeah, I just pre-said that this one was explicit.
Holy shit, that's awesome. Yeah, oh my gosh. So, forget everything else we talked about the past 58 minutes. That is freaking rad. Oh yeah, my God.
And it's a pretty easy process, and it keeps your SaaS providers honest, you know, and because what frustrated me in my career in the enterprise, and I think what frustrates people in general is these blind spots, right? It's the lack of visibility. And the one thing, like as I said, I'm going to beat the dead horse here. If it has an IP address and we have some fluency into it, it can't hide.
Even if you don't own it, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be your IP address.
Yep.
If it has an IP address and something on your network's talking to it, it can't hide.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Yep. So like I said, you know, the richest source of data that you own is your network. And there's nobody that can, there's no one that can provide visibility into that at the rate that we do. There's just, and with the openness and with the, you know, with the openness and the ability to integrate like we can.
And yep. This has to be something that runs on your network also. I mean, you know, you could sell your product as a service, you know, air quotes, like subscription model. But at the end of the day, you know, there's got to be some code that sees your actual network locally live to be able to do all the stuff that it does.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Hey, so, let me ask you a nerdy I don't even know if you would know this. Like, what does it take to do, you know, 40 gigabits? I mean, is there like a bunch of processors in there? Is there GPUs? Is this a dumb question? It's like one ARM thing the size of a fingernail does it. I don't even know anymore. But like, to actually, you know, like live, especially if it's encrypted, like live decrypt and sort of sort through and analyze, you know, 40 gigabit fire hose. Yeah, that's a big box, right?
It's a pretty big box. Yeah, it's a pretty big box. So it's an appliance. We have four 10 gig ports. What does it take? It takes a really bunch of really, really smart guys in an office on Pike Street, right? So I don't know what exactly goes into it, but basically the way we're able to do it, at least on the SSL encryption side, on the physical boxes, we have an SSL accelerator, right? SSL chip that helps with the decryption for us, right? So, and we're able to do that again without any penalty. If you tried to do, you know, 10 gigabits of SSL on a VM where you're sharing the CPU, I'm not sure what the benchmarks would be. But on the physical ones, we leverage the SSL accelerator for that. And then for us, you know, I mean, if it was like something like constant peak cap, I'm not sure how you would do it at 40 gigabits per second. That because to be honest, you would need disk and you would need not cheap disk, right? You need a lot of spindles. You know, or I'm not sure even the solid state disks could be written to that fast. So for us, the way we do it is we observe data and we kind of pull the metadata out, right? I mean, we can pull things like headers, that kind of information out. And that's kind of how we're able to scale. And we offer something called precision PCAP. So we can still do PCAPs, but we do it as needed versus giving you this gigantic 17 terabyte PCAP on a multi-million dollar SAN. We'll do, let's say I want a PCAP every time someone mounts a hidden drive share or every time there's a 500 error or like in some of the security use cases, I want digital evidence of them screwing up. Well, now I have a PCAP of it and I can fire. You get a visit from Chester, the security guy, and he walks you out of the building. But those are some of the, in terms of how we get to 40 gigabits, it's a bunch of smart guys in Seattle.
Yeah. And to your point, right, you're not capturing and analyzing. I mean, you can't, you know, you'd fill up your box so fast. So you sort of can analyze enough in real time and then sort of intelligently save what you need to. Yep. But it's not just streaming it to disk.
Correct. Correct. Now we can, like I said, we have precision PCAP where, you know, you can do targeted packet captures and that works fine. And then we also, so we guarantee 30 days of look back, and that's 30 days. So if you get a 40 gig box and you're going at 40 gigabits per second for 30 straight days, we'll guarantee 30 days of look back. Most of our customers do quite a bit better than that. So you can also go back in time. So we've got a sort of a mini way back machine if someone, because this is also how escalations work too, right? Things were crappy at 5 o'clock on Thursday. Well, then we position you to be able to go back. If they say it was crappy 6 months ago, you're probably can't do that, but you know, we allow you to also go back in time and look at you know, network conditions at that specific time. So you know, if there was a code change, something like that, you know, or a corrupt index, you know, you can definitely have visibility into that.
So you seem to know a lot about this stuff, and I know, you know, you were the EdSight guy, you know, the EdSight under the hood and that sort of stuff. You wrote that and spoke about that at Bri Forum. But now at ExtraHop, you're a solutions architect, so you're not on the product team. You're out in the field working with customers implementing this, or what do you actually do? Is your job there?
What do you do?
What do you do?
What would you say you do? Exactly. That's my favorite scene of Office Space. Yeah. So great. So I am a solutions architect. Yeah, and I'm actually in the trenches with the customer. Helping them get it deployed, helping them get operationalized, helping them punk bust, you know, helping them do all that kind of stuff. So that's what I do. And I do podcasts.
So. Yeah. So, I mean, you're kind of like the ExtraHop super user, essentially. I mean, you know, if you're their number one user.
I don't know about number one, man. We've got some, it's interesting. Some of the greatest innovations actually come from our customers, right? I mean, every once in a while we'll be at a customer where there's this DevOps fiend and you hand them something like ExtraHop and you just like I always wanted to just hand this to Remco and just see what he does with it. right? Just see what kind of diabolical things he can come do with it. You know, I mean, that's I've seen, I don't think I'm in the top 10. I mean, there's some just amazing things that I've seen our customers do, all the way again from business intelligence to security to the, you know, performance break fix. I mean, it's just amazing when you get someone, you know, with the mindset. You know, we have a lot of canned products, and so there's very little you have to do to deploy it. But again, like I said earlier, we give you that blank slate, we give you that empty canvas, and I'll tell you, I've seen some absolute masterpieces from some of our customers.
So, what do you think is next? I mean, you know, kind of looking down the road a little bit for, you know, wired data analytics and for ExtraHop. I mean, obviously, you can always have, you know, today it's a 40 gig box and tomorrow it's a 100 gig and the next, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, in terms of looking at this business, looking at the space, you know, how do you see the next couple of years playing out?
Well, it's interesting. A couple of Gartner analysts actually called it, and I'm paraphrasing, but they basically called it the most critical source of performance data and availability data. So the analysts have gotten on board with this. I think wired data is I'm 100% confident that the richest source of data that exists in any enterprise is the wire, is the network. So I think, within the industry, I think you're going to see, I think that we might see 100 gigabit. I don't know what the timeline is on that. Gosh, Cisco Live is going on right now. It's probably a breakout session that they're talking about right now. But, I think you're seeing other vendors, you know, align with wired data. I think, you know, Cisco's Tetration announcement, you know, they're getting involved in wired data, at least up to layer 4. And I think you're going to see, you know, there are other wired data vendors out there. I think that at least in our case, you know, with Gartner acknowledging the richness of the network data source, I think you're going to see wired data start to come to the forefront. We kind of see, you know, a number of data sources. We like synthetic transactions, machine data, log data, and then wired data. For me, wired data is far and away the best data source. I think that, you know, the big three, synthetic, machine, log data, you know, those are still going to be very relevant, but I think you're going to see wired data come to the forefront as the most relevant form of gathering information about your network. If the truth is on the wire, that's kind of one of our battle cries.
Yeah, man. And going back to what we said and kind of what to Jack's point about, you know, the ability to use this with everything, even all the external stuff. So not even just back to what's sitting between your Citrix server and your internal apps, but all of, you know, you can watch the data going back to Office 365 and Salesforce and just everything on the back end. Which, like, think about that. It's not just their SLAs and everything. It's like you could even look at which users are using which apps and which services. You know, you could look at which things are being used that aren't really, like, just something like, hey, who in the company is using Dropbox? And just like blink, and then just find all the data going to Dropbox. And it doesn't matter if they're on their, you know, what platform or how they're using it or whether it's a website or whatever. It's just like, boom, there you go.
Yeah, and we have a bundle for that, by the way. So
it's literally called the Who's Using Dropbox bundle, right?
No, I don't know if it's called the Who's. It's a part of a security bundle we wrote to catch things like Dropbox and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
You know, we had that.
Well, I was just going to say, like, we could have used that on the other side of it. You know, they could have, TechTarget could have used that to say, you're using Dropbox. And we could have also pointed to it and said, yeah, but it's still not the thing that's making your network go down. It's probably this thing over here.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Yep.
You know,
I would call this product like Fingerpoint or like, you know, CYA or not my effing problem, something like that. So if you're ever going to give it a product name. Because it's just the ExtraHop platform, right?
It's the ExtraHop platform, correct. Yep. Yep.
So where was this? I mean, you know, when we did, we had that whole narrative 5 years ago about FUIT, you know, the whole FUIT thing and, you know, what companies do to deal with this and everything. And this would have been a big help. I mean, I guess companies, this is still, an issue that companies deal with, but it's something we talked about a lot before as an issue. I think now everyone just gets it. That's an issue. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hey man, we have burned an hour talking about Wire data analytics and the ExtraHop platform. So I'd like to, first of all, John, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Today's podcast has been sponsored by ExtraHop, so we appreciate that. Before we sign off, I want to get sort of closing thoughts. I guess first of all, people who are interested in this stuff, what's next? I mean, how do I get one of these things? How do I find out more? How do I start playing with it?
At ExtraHop is our Twitter handle, or ExtraHop.com. You can email me directly too. I'm happy to talk to anybody. And my email is johnsmith, all one word, at ExtraHop.com as well. So you can reach out to us and we'll put you – if you want to talk to me and have just a quick architecture conversation, send me an email and I'd be happy to talk to you. But then our Twitter handle is at ExtraHop, and you can go to ExtraHop.com, and we have a way to fill out if you want to do a demo. We actually have a demo site too, demo.extrahop.com. You can actually go demo the product as well. So you can actually see it. Yeah, so if you want to reach out to either me or tweet at us or go to our website and fill out the form, I can assure you our salespeople are easy to work with. They're not annoying. They won't drive you crazy. So if you want to reach out to us, we'd be happy to prove everything that we talked about, and we will we'll help you guys do some help your audience do some punk busting. So great.
That is quite the warranty of assuring you that your salespeople are not annoying. John Smith puts his reputation on the line.
I'll get them if they are. You just email me. Exactly.
Yeah. So. Right. If anyone is ever annoyed at any point in time with anyone or anything relating to ExtraHop or life in general, may email John Smith, one word, at extrahop.com, extrahop.com.
Or you could probably email John Smith and just put anything, anyknowncompany.com, and I'm sure it'll land somewhere at 50%.
Yeah.
It's 50% of the
you know, company. That's great. John Smith at google.com. I'm mad at Google. I like it. Awesome. Well, hey, man, anything that we missed before we sign off, anything else that you know you want to say, or just kind of any final thoughts about anything?
No, only final thought is like I said earlier, there's a lot of good stuff on your wire, and if you want to check it out, give us a call. So nope, other than that, thanks a lot, guys. It's been great to do the podcast with you guys.
Yeah, thank you, and we will see you at Bri Forum.
Probably the last day I'll be traveling, but I will be up there on the 28th. So I will probably stop by then. Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. So thank you so much for joining and for filling us in. And thanks to Gabe and Jack and all of you for listening, and to ExtraHop for sponsoring. And I guess that's it, right? Bri Forum is July 13th. This is being recorded on Bri Forum Boston, takes place 2 weeks, like literally 2 weeks from now, we will be in the midst of Bri Forum. So if you haven't registered yet, we have announced this is the last Bri Forum. It's our 20th one, and this is going to be the last one. So if you haven't been to a Bri Forum, or you haven't been in a few years, we better see you in Boston in about 2 weeks, or else you will be very sad.
And if you haven't been, trust me, you've done yourself a disservice. So look, go harangue your boss and tell him you're going. So awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Hey, well, thanks, everyone. We will sign off. Happy Wire data analysis, everyone.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.